Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
So Storm and Norman does mornings on WeeB 108 right now. But, man, he has time at PLR, time at I-95, and we're going to go through all of that. And he has stories on John Lennon and Billy Joel. And how did you get the name Storm and Norman?
You know what? It happened. Thanks, Chaz, too. It's, I'm just honored that we're together here. It's a pleasure. You've become the legend.
Oh, man.
So cool.
No, the honor is mine. I grew up listening to you, so this is really cool for me. Thank you.
If I hear that one more time.
I know. Isn't that the... I know.
But I've gotten to that point in my life, though. It happened at Central Catholic High School in Norwalk. Where the Fox is, and I got it in high school because my football coach called me Storm and Norman, and it stuck. It was better than Norman the Dorman, which I used to get in grammar school.
Storm and Norman is way cooler.
Yeah.
I actually thought it came from a program director or something because in that time there was Doc Rock, Stone Man, Buzz Knight, like everybody had a name. Rock Woman.
I love her.
Yeah. We're going to get to her in a second. Yeah. So, you know, I really remember you from I-95.
That was my first job. I started it. It was WINE AM and FM and was top 40 playing like, you know, Moonlight Feels Right and Eric Carmen and stuff. And our general manager, our president of the company, said, hey, you know what, you guys? This was in the bicentennial summer of 76. We're going to change format, and we're going to call it I-95. And it was for the highway. It's like, okay. So I did the first afternoon drive show on I-95. And
cool.
It was fun. It was great. And that got me to PLR eventually.
I always had a hard time figuring out why would they call it I-95 after the highway when they don't reach they don't reach that highway. Like, you can't hear them.
Yeah, at that time, I guess there was really not that much thought that went into the process of calling it something. And because it was 95 on the dial, actually,
yeah.
It was 95 point whatever it was.
One?
It was the thought process that evolved into that. And that's what we became. We had Tom Zarecki doing mornings, and I did afternoons, and Jim Schultz did middays. And it was a really great station. I mean, at the time, everybody's releasing, great records.
Yeah.
And
that was
we played them as records.
Nuts.
And, it became, and it's still on. I mean, Ethan Carey has been there for God knows how long.
I think he's...
It was a great radio station. I actually lived at the transmitter site for a few years in Brookfield up on the mountaintop.
You lived
there.
And the
transmitter was next to me, next to my bedroom, which was pretty bizarre.
How the fuck does that happen?
It's $75 a week for rent, and that's how it happened. And my paintings, I did... it was pretty bizarre. My paintings are still in that building that I painted on the ceiling. We had quite a few memorable moments there. We used to think we lived directly under the antenna.
Oh boy!
Up on Carmen Hill Road, and that was a pretty bizarre time. Blizzard of 78. I was trapped there for like 4 days, but it was fun.
So would you be home getting stoned, and then you walk out, and then there's your chief engineer like tinkering with the transmitter?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I was always worried about, I had the AM and the FM transmitter right next door. And, I mean, literally in the other room. And I'm thinking, like, Jesus, I wonder if there's any kind of radiation. But so far, you know.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you had a lot of power. Yeah. You know, if they pissed you off, you could go right in there, unplug them.
That could have happened, but the equipment was old. I remember... there was a guy that lived next door who was a disc jockey in Danbury at the time. And I used to walk around naked all the time. And he'd be out there mowing his lawn, and I'd be walking around with my roommate. And it was quite bizarre.
That was the 70s. You could kind of walk around naked a little bit more than you can now without getting arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah. What year did you end up at PLR?
I got to PLR after I got fired from I-95. In July 23rd of 79, I had an interview with our then PD, Gordon Weingarth, the legendary Gordon Weingarth. We sat in a little restaurant in a hotel one afternoon, and I remember him telling me that we are not going to play something like a mellow top 40 song. But we do play mellow songs, but we also rock. So my first song ever on WPLR was Meatloaf from Bat Out of Hell. Took the words right out of my mouth. And I remember sitting down in that chair, and the chair was really weird because it was a very wide chair because one of the persons that worked there, which was Stone Man, which he was just a great guy, had a little wide girth at the time, and it was just really weird sitting in that same seat, you know, touching the same console buttons, the volume controls, on the board with the legendary Stone Man and everybody else who worked at PLR in the 70s. It was just bizarre. I was, like, surreal.
How old were you at that point?
Probably about 25-ish.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, right? You go in and you're now in the studio. It's like being at the plate at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of set up like a living room set up. Over in one side of the studio was a round table with a lamp. And the studio was very living room-like. We had lamps, not the overhead.
That's great.
And it was really homey.
Pot seeds.
And the first thing that I noticed, getting in the studio, you look behind the console, and there were 10,000 albums.
10,000.
And at that time, there was no format. It's like, holy shit, what am I going to play? And my first shift was overnight shift. And I kept looking, and it's like, wow, look at this. I can play anything I want. And it worked. It was bizarre. You can play music by what sounded good together or what somebody would actually call us for as a request. And then you just work off the next song. Like if I played Pink Floyd, maybe I'd play Yes. And it was great. It was the funnest time I ever had on the radio.
25 years old, you're on a 50,000-watt flame-throwing rock station playing whatever you want. It's what's better than that?
Yeah,
and the greatest
there wasn't
thing.
Anything so, better at the time?
No.
It was just mind blowing, and you know, there's so many stories and so many great times that I think all of us had at that point in time. Marcia did mornings, Rock Woman, Marcia Simon, Eddie Wazoo was doing the midday show, Gordon doing afternoons.
I think maybe that's the other way around.
Gordon did.
Yeah,
yeah, it was flipped around, and then Stone Man came on with the Stone Man special every night, and then Doc Rock, and I started doing overnight, which was a really weird thing because when you do overnights, you're against the grain of everybody else.
What do you mean?
And I would, you know, have to go to sleep when I got home. I used to live in Danbury at the time. And you'd have to
You were still living at I-95's transmitter site?
I moved to an apartment.
Oh, okay.
Which was a whole nother story. Actually in Brookfield, right behind where Stu Leonard's is now.
Just thought it'd be funny if you were working at PLR and living right next to your competition's transmitter. I just think that makes
sense. Yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I really think, you know, PLR was it, though. I-95 was a little blip. And, you know, it was the best time that I had in radio, physically and mentally.
Wow, you know, that says a lot because you know, and we can go through it quickly. What you've done since PLR, you were there for 2 years, but to say that was your best experience, that says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it was really freedom, and you know, unlike most radio today, I mean, literally, if anybody wanted to hear something and we had it, we played it. The thing that I really enjoyed the most was every album had a piece of paper. I don't know if you heard this before,
yes.
But we had a piece of paper on every album cover, and they were all alphabetical. And every time you played a song from an album, you'd have to put your initials and the date and the time you played the album. I have some here, and I got to know everybody through their handwriting. Like, I know what your car looks like in the morning.
Yeah.
And I know what AJ's car looks like. It's like nobody knows what that is. But I, you know, it's just weird knowing these great talents by their handwriting.
Yeah, I saw those albums when I got there in 86. We were still doing albums, and you'd pull an album, and then some of the older ones would still have that piece of paper with all the writing on it, dates and times of what songs got played.
And that was, like, really the format because there was no other way to tell what somebody played earlier in the day unless you wrote it down.
Yeah, that's great.
So we were guaranteed that we weren't playing Freebird live version 13 minutes three times a day, although that was, you know, the bathroom song. And they were the most pristine copies of everything because we all took care of them, even though we played albums on turntables. They were just like they were just opened, and the sound quality was great, and there was nothing like it. And I don't think we had any kind of audio processing at the time. Although, now here's a quick story about one of our engineers, chief engineer named Cliff Mills, who took care of the transmitter and, you know, all the.
Cliff was still there when I got there.
Wow, great guy. So one night he said, we got to lower the power. I have to go to the transmitter and do some work. Just segue some albums. You don't have to do any talking. So I put on Dark Side of the Moon, and I went outside. We used to have a sofa outside of the studio, and I'm just lying there, you know, kind of spacing out. It's probably like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I see the studio light ringing, the hotline. Evidently, the album wasn't as pristine as I thought, and every time the word bullshit came around in Money, the song, it would skip. So for about 15, 20 minutes, all you heard on PLR at the time was the word, you know, do-do-good bullshit going down, and it was like, oh, man.
That's great. Cliff's like, what the hell is he doing over there?
Yeah, but it was you know, a really cool studio.
You were on the night that John Lennon was shot, correct?
Yes, I actually got a phone call from my dear friend Eddie, who I'm still friends with to this day, and he called me up. I was doing midnight to 6, and he called me up about 11:15 or so. I was just on my way to work.
Is this Eddie Wazoo?
No, this is a close friend, Eddie, from Norwalk.
Gotcha.
And he said, did you hear? And I said, hear what? He goes, you know, Lennon's dead. I was like, oh, my God, I got to go to work. Let me leave. Let me get to work. And Doc Rock was on the air prior to me getting there. And at the time, there were no details except that, you know, John Lennon was dead. And the phones were ringing. And Bob had already had the insight to be able to start just playing Beatles back to back. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was looking. At that time, we didn't have any internet. There was nothing. And there was a teletype machine, and bulletins were coming over right. the machine. And about 3 o'clock, we got word that the guy's name was who shot Lennon was announced. So I have a little piece of tape here that
I can play it from here, Norm. I think it'll sound okay. better. Which one do you want to play here? So cut 1, 2, or 3?
Cut 3 is about 34 seconds of me announcing the first time ever that we heard the words Mark David Chapman.
All right, let's play that.
It's a sad morning, December 9th, 1980, and from what we just got over the newswire from the Associated Press here, I'll tell you exactly what happened. This is as much of news as we have so far concerning John Lennon. The man arrested and charged with murder in the fatal shooting of John Lennon has been identified by police as 25-year-old Mark David Chapman of Hawaii. Now, Mark is described as a 5'11", 195-pound. Brown hair, and one report says brown eyes, one says blue eyes.
That's and it's, that forever it gives me chills.
It was just, I don't know, goosebumps. It was everything that you could imagine being on the air the time that John Lennon died.
Yeah.
And announcing that name for the first time, I'll never forget it. And we went on to play 30 hours worth of Beatles music at PLR constantly. You know, it was kind of unheard of. Nobody had ever of that magnitude ever affected us. A death like that affected us as John Lennon getting shot. And, you know, the phones again were ringing. People were calling and venting and sad and crying and,
yeah,
we all lived through that together. And then the morning of, I guess it must have been the 11th.
Were you playing lots of music, playing lots of calls, a little bit of both, out of a song,
yeah.
calls, into
all,
a song?
All Beatles. I mean, we went through every Beatles album, probably played every song. And, you know, Lennon had just come out with a Double Fantasy album, a couple of days before he got shot. So we dug into that really deep. And the morning after the morning after, Marcia Simon, who did mornings, Rock Woman, came on at 6. And we had to figure out at the time, how do we end 30 hours of Beatles music? How does this, how do we stop this?
It's yeah.
sacrilegious. It's like, Jesus, how are we going to end this? And we figured out how to end it. And in this cut, number 1 is Marcia and I. And there's a little bit of a Trapper Dave Calabrese.
Love him.
Doing a, you might remember the Jimmy's Army Navy spot. So here that is.
Jimmy's Army Navy at 1019 Boston Post Road in West Haven, 990 Main Street in Bridgeport, and Commerce Plaza. That's on Newtown Road in Danbury. And they're now open Sundays through Christmas.
All right, time now is just about a minute before 6 o'clock. My name is Norman Norman, and Marcia Simon is here with me this morning, close for the first time
yeah,
together on the air.
We do this like this.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's this been for the past 30 hours here?
Well, it hasn't been easy. I think all of us have been extremely touched, you know, all the tributes, everything that's happened for John Lennon here. And been trying, Norman and I have been talking about, you know, what we're going to do now. John Lennon was a kind of man who believed that life should go on, and he didn't dwell on heroes or those who have died. He said that life is for the living. And I think that he would be very touched himself had he known, you know, how strong his fans have been and the tributes and the vigils and all that. I don't think he would have expected that, and I don't know if he would, you know, how much he would encourage that, really.
People haven't let up with these phone calls at all throughout the whole overnight here. And I did attend the vigil that was in New Haven last night on the mm-hmm. green, and it was just incredible. I mean, there's people from every walk of life, people from every age group, with small babies, with their 5 and 6 year old sons walking around saying, you know, we're here because we want to be here, and we want to show our kids that, hey, this is how much they meant to us, and, right, and John Lennon did.
It's a major loss. And the parallel that's been drawn between John Lennon's death and that of President Kennedy, I think that was something, I don't know about you, but I was very young then. That was something that I couldn't really understand. I was too young to really grasp it, but my parents, because Kennedy stood for everything my parents believed in and fought for, it was a major loss to them. I think John Lennon stood for everything we believe in, our whole generation, so I think it was that same kind of loss in that respect.
And what are we going to do here? This is something that...
Very untraditional as far as radio goes.
Done before.
Since, you know, we're trying to think, what would John Lennon want? He would like life to go on and people to be happy. We've had 30 hours of Beatle John Lennon music, and, you know, I think John would like us now to go on with life as things were meant to be. Before that, we would like to play a very special tribute to him in some way. And radio is a medium geared towards time. Everything is timed down to the second. There's a thing called dead air. You're not supposed to have dead air. A second here, a second there.
Because people will turn the radio off when they don't hear anything on their speaker.
As if there might be something wrong. I think that if the music is going to stop, maybe we should pay a minute of silence, and we can all reflect and just think and you know, give some thoughts to John Lennon that way. So I think maybe that's what we'll do.
Okay.
Okay, and then, you know, if you want to stick with us for this 1 minute, we hope you will, and then we will resume our regular programming, and life goes on.
Okay, let's have a moment of silence for John Lennon.
And so that was a minute, but we cut that down, right?
Yep, that
yeah.
was
that was a full know, minute.
I cut that out, but yes, and then it was back to you know, regular great PLR music after that. But you know, we had to decide what it was.
That's a great moment, Norm. I think that's
it.
The reason why PLR has been around for 50 years, I think, is because not only was it sex, drugs, rock and roll, great music and craziness, but also it has a tradition of connecting in those types of moments. And that was really well done.
Thank you. And I used to listen to Marcia Simon at my, again, good friend Eddie's home in Norwalk when I was a delivery boy in between radio jobs. And I hear Marcia blasting from his speakers upstairs in his bedroom. And little did I know that not only would I be working with Marcia and seeing her every day, but we became best friends. I'd go over to her house. We'd go to, you know, she'd get off the air at 10. After she did mornings, I did overnights. We'd go to Manhasset every day and Roy Rogers. And it was a fun, fun time. And everybody who worked there were just good, good people, funny and terrific people. Just an amazing time. And that little blip that I have of my history of PLR, which was fantastic.
Let me go back 1 second. In that clip, you said we're close. For the first time, like, were you in the same studio? What was different about that moment?
She sat on my lap. We only had one. We only had one on-air mic.
Is that right?
In that studio, and she sat on my lap. It was like, you know, it was kind of. I consider her as, still to this day as like a sister, and we had never ever been close before. And it was kind of odd, but it was the only way to be able to sit on the same mic. And, you know,
oh, wow.
We did all that while she was sitting on my knee like my grandkids.
Wow.
It was bizarre.
That's
And I remember getting yelled at. We had a great group of news people, Neil Brasa DeFerro.
I remember Neil.
And
Neil trained me.
And Beth, yeah, he was a great guy. And Beth Barron and Terry. Jerry Branham was our news director. And I can remember, I probably like 2 days later after Lennon was shot, I called Mark David Chapman a crazy lunatic on the air. And Terry came in that morning, and she was listening to me on her drive in, and she goes, "You can't say that. You know, you will get sued," or something to that effect, because I formed an opinion of Mark David Chapman, who he was. But, I mean, the guy was nuts.
I think she forgot. I think she forgot the line between a news person saying that and a personality giving an opinion. You know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But we did have a great news staff, and you know, we were right there when you know things happened. We were on the air when John Bonham died from Zeppelin and Keith Moon. It was you know, a bunch of people that, you know, unfortunately had passed away in that era that I was there.
PLR had a news division, a team, and they rivaled News 8, which was Action News 8 at the time. And, in fact, Channel 8 picked off some of our news people. You would hear them on PLR, then all of a sudden they're not on PLR, they're on Channel 8.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot about how strong the news division was at PLR. When I spoke to Marcia, I asked her about the Billy Joel show at Toad's Place, and she thought that it may have been you who tipped her off that Billy Joel was playing there.
Mm-hmm. I had a good relationship with Mike Sperndel, who was the owner of Toad's Place. And one morning, I don't even know what day it was, but it was the summertime. Just prior to me getting off the air before 6, Mike called me and said, hey, Storman, can you come over to Toad's when you get off the air? I got something for you to do. I was like, sure, okay, Mike. And, you know, I get there. And it's like 6:10 in the morning, and there's a big tractor trailer parked in front of Toad's. And they open up the back doors and put down the ramp. And myself, and there was a great local group called the Sims Brothers Band, Frank and George Sims.
I remember them.
And, you know, this is one of the groups that we played a lot locally. And, you know, we're pulling out, me and George and Frank Sims and a bunch of other people pulling out equipment from this tractor trailer truck. And it had on the equipment stenciled in, like the anvil cases, the calzone cases, Billy J and the Dakota Five. None of us had any inkling of what we were doing, but little did we know we were actually loading in Billy Joel's equipment. And you know, we got everything loaded in, and Mike said, "Hey guys, thanks for the help, come back around 2:00 this afternoon." So I go home and come back to Toad's Place again in New Haven at 2:00, and there's all the equipment that we had lugged out of this tractor trailer all set up. And Billy J and the Dakota Five was Billy Joel. And we got to watch his sound check at Toad's. And he was a Beatles fanatic and still is. And he went through his songs and just played a ton of Beatles. And we got invited back again to the show that night.
Wow.
And, you know, it was pretty memorable.
Wow.
And another
legendary
story I have, and this is my Weeby days. In 89, when I was music director at Weeby 108 at the time, we got a word from Mike's partner, Brian, that there's going to be a show that night. You got to come to Toad's. Now, I had passes to meet Ringo Starr that night on Long Island. So I grabbed my wife and my friends and Marcia. And we got into Toad's. We paid $3 to get in the door.
So you passed on meeting. You passed on meeting Ringo Starr.
Yeah, on a hunch that something better was going to happen.
Wow.
I had already met Paul McCartney, so I said, "Well, you know what? Let's take this hunch." So we ended up standing on a church pew, which is literally next to the stage at Toad's, And in comes walking Daryl Hall with a girl named Patty Hansen, who happened to be Keith Richards' wife.
Holy shit.
And it's like, wow, this is something. And Jimmy Coppola came out, and a group called Sons of Bob played a set. And that night at Toad's was Jimmy, and I'll never forget this, and I always remind Jimmy of this, Coppola. It was his 40th birthday. And Jimmy came out and said, hey, Sons of Bob, whatever, it's my 40th birthday, blah, blah, blah. And we're standing on a church pew next to the stage. And Jimmy goes, ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. And look at my goosebumps here, Chaz. Wow. Holy Jesus. And Mick comes out. The band comes out. We're standing eye level with Chuck Lavelle, who was on keyboards. And the first notes is Start Me Up, and the place went crazy. And that was my Toad story.
Oh, shit.
Seeing the Rolling Stones.
You saw Billy Joel
yes.
and the Rolling Stones there, two of the most famous of all the thousands of shows there throughout the decades.
And Jimmy was the guy that brought everybody, everybody to New Haven or Hartford at the time. And now with the new amphitheater in Bridgeport, it'll just continue to keep, the legacy of Jimmy Coppola. At the time, it was Jimmy Coppola and Shelley Finkel. And I know somewhere in your drawers, there's a ticket stub that says, cross-country concert,
yes.
Jimmy Coppola and Shelley Finkel presents. And you name it, he did it.
I have a collection of those. You're absolutely right. Tell me about meeting Paul McCartney. How did that happen?
We had, this is my Weeby days again. It was 2 weeks after seeing the Stones. And I got invited to a press conference for Paul at the Lyceum Theater on Broadway. And I brought a video camera with me. And we just kind of moseyed in and sat down in the front row. And Paul was introducing Flowers in the Dirt, which was new album at the time. And he did like an 8-song show for us. And I got to ask a question of Paul. Worldwide audience, my knees were shaking.
Wow.
I was the second person to ask a question. I had no idea what I'm going to ask Paul McCartney in a live press conference with a wireless microphone, worldwide audience, until I got handed the mic. And I stood up and I said, hey, Paul, Stormin Norman from Weeby 108 Radio. Oh, he's like, hey. And I say, hey, Paul, how do you choose a set of songs? This is the first time he was going on tour since 76. And this was 89. How do you choose a set of songs? And he goes, interesting question, Norman. I choose pre-Beatles. I'll do the Beatles. I'll do the Wings stuff and solo stuff. And that question, the answer, got into all the newspapers and most of the news and entertainment shows.
It's a great question.
Like, Jesus.
It's
a
great question.
What would you ask Paul, Chaz? What would you ask Paul McCartney if he just, walked in the studio?
Oh, can I have $1 million? I love that question because that's just how do you put the songs together? It's a great question,
and it was a great answer, and and that was it. It was like wow, and I have that whole thing on video and audio.
Before we wrap up. I don't know if I want to ask you about the Eagles at Yale Bowl or some Stone Man stories. How about a little bit of both?
I had been on the air. Eagles were playing Yale Bowl, and it was ended up as an album centerfold for their double live album, A Picture from a Helicopter. And I was on the air during that time, and I remember PLR had a legendary back porch. We used to call it, and it was just going out the back door, and open up the door, and you could just hang out. We smoked, we did whatever we did, and I remember going out there during the Eagles concert. All the helicopters were flying overhead. I was like, Jesus, I'm the only guy on the air. Everybody else is at the Yale Bowl watching the Eagles.
You were that guy. It's like, hey, we're all going to a big concert, Norm.
Yeah. Yeah,
take over.
Unfortunately, Norman, you got to be on the air. But it was, it was like, wow. And then that ended up as that centerfold that a lot of people now use with aluminum foil and get a suntan with.
Were you the guy playing the Eagles music as people were getting in their cars?
Yeah, that was something that PLR was always notorious for.
Yeah.
Whenever a concert would be over, whether it was at Coliseum or Hartford, we'd play, we kind of figured out the timing of people leaving. And we'd just go right into a special. It was great.
Yeah, that's, wow, what a memory that is. Because it's a concert that'll live forever. People still talk about it today. The picture of the Yale Bowl is in the center of the Eagles live album. Even though that live recording is not from the Yale Bowl, that picture is. And you were on the radio station playing the Eagles as people got out into their cars. So you're connected to that whole thing. That's pretty cool,
yeah.
Man. That's very, very cool. What about Stone Man? You were in the building when the legendary Stone Man was there.
Yeah, it was, an experience. He sat there. He smoked. There was always an ashtray next to the board, the console. And for those of us who smoked, it was like, sitting in your living room again because the studio was set up that way. And it was always, you'd watch him. I'd watch him through the windows like, oh, my God, that's Stone Man doing the Stone Man special. And it was like, Jesus, I can't believe I'm, the next guy on the air. After that, the seat was still warm.
Yeah, that's cool.
At one point in time, we decided stupidly that we all wanted to form a union because everybody thought that we made $1 million being on the radio. But in fact, that wasn't true. But we were going to do a union, and Stone Man used to pick me up at my apartment in West Haven at the time behind Denny's. That's a whole nother story. And we go to a lawyer's place in Milford. He'd come in with his big Cadillac. And I'd sit in his car. And we were just, we'd just talk. And he's just a normal, nice guy. And he got on the air and he sounded the same as he did sitting in a seat. We never got the union.
No, everyone was let go.
Yeah.
it was somewhere around 1981, right?
Yep, you got it. And that was that.
And then before we leave, your son is serving now overseas.
My son, Charlie, is one of the greatest kids ever. He wanted to always be a fireman, fire person, whatever it is now. And he did. In Trumbull, he became a volunteer fireman. And he got a full-time job in Milford, but in the meantime, he went to boot camp in Georgia and became a soldier for the Connecticut National Guard. And Charlie right now, and I pray for him every day, is in Djibouti, Africa, as a medic in the Connecticut National Guard Army. And I couldn't be any more proud of him. And I even put up a flagpole in our yard with the American flag and the Connecticut National Guard flag. And I hope that in March, when he comes home after a year, that he'll be the one to take the flag down.
Oh, man, that's beautiful. God bless Charlie. And you must be awfully proud. I can hear it in your voice right now. And one of the things we don't think about when we say thank you for your service to a service member is that the families are also serving. I mean, you're just sitting here waiting.
I never thought that saying goodbye to him in March, a few months ago, at the National Guard Armory in Middletown was going to be as emotional as it was. And it was. Seeing your son leaving for over a year or two, going somewhere to fight the bad guys, and he's always on my mind, always on our minds here, and just hope for the best. you know. Hope that it's going to be a safe trip, and then he'll come back, and he'll be a Milford fireman again.
Well, we're going to have a beer with him when he comes back. We promised him that we're having beers.
I can't wait. He can't wait for that.
Norm, it's I walk down the hall every day, pinch myself that I'm in the halls at WPLR, but then I'll walk by someone like you. I'm like, holy shit, there's Storm and Norman. So thanks for coming on, and thanks for sharing the stories, and happy 50th birthday to WPLR. Here's to another 50th.
My pleasure, Chaz, and here's to another 50 more at WPLR New Haven.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.